the summer I ran a new record on the Pennine Way, which is 260 miles, and I knew, yeah, it was a really competitive record, so I knew I had to be really motivated. It was going to take me 2.5 days, pretty much non-stop, and there would definitely be moments where I'd feel very tired and not necessarily want to quit, but want to sit down for a long time or lie down or just cry a bit or sleep a bit more than I just sleep a bit more than I simply had time for. So it was more about staying motivated to sort of keep moving at a decent pace. What I did was chatting to this sports psychologist, Dr. Josie Perry. She recommended, thinking long and hard about what was going to motivate me, what was my why, and then trying to make it kind of visual so that I would have these reminders. What I did in the end was I got a permanent marker and I wrote three F's on my forearm, and that stood for friends, family, future.
You just heard from Damien Hall, multi-record breaking ultramarathon runner, coach and journalist. And the crazy part is, Damien didn't start running until he was in his late 30s. In this episode, Damien shares the mental and physical aspects of being an ultra marathon runner, as well as the highs and lows of his short but incredible running career. If you're a runner of any level or simply want to improve and upgrade your mindset, then stay tuned because this is the episode for you. Welcome to the show. My name is Ali West, and since 2008, I have been working in the health and fitness industry. In the space of just under 10 years, I went from being a glorified treadmill cleaner to the owner of my own 9,000 square foot gym, Kinetic Fitness, here in Nottingham in the United Kingdom. Plus helping thousands of people along the way, both offline and online, to improve their health and well-being. Now I want to help you do the same by sharing my own wisdom and the wisdom of some of the brightest minds in health, fitness, nutrition, biohacking and spirituality, so you can become optimally healthy in your mind, body and spirit. If you're ready, then let the show begin.
Hello and welcome to the Kinetic Fitness Show, where we inspire you to live a longer, healthier, happy and more joyful life. We cover everything you need to know to be optimally healthy in your mind, body and spirit. Are you ready to become the ultimate version of yourself? Well, let's dive into another episode with your host and guide by your side, Ali West.
Hello, and welcome to episode 109 of the Kinetic Fitness Show podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today and for sparing your precious time to upgrade your health. Today, we are going to dig deep into the mindset and physical capacities of an ultra marathon runner. My guest today has a very interesting story, and you could say somewhat unique story, considering he has represented Great Britain in ultra marathon running and has broken numerous records, but he only started running in his late 30s. It's a really interesting and incredible journey that Damien has been on, and we dig deep into mindset and physical elements of ultra marathon running. But before I introduce him and tell you a little bit more about Damien, there's just a few announcements that I'd like to make in relation to this podcast. They will help me to grow. They will help me to inspire more people, and just a few notes from our sponsors today as well. My first announcement is asking for your help and support. I've just launched a crowdfunding campaign for the Kinetic Fitness Show. This podcast is now at the point where we need to take it to the next level. This means improved audio, visual, editing, hosting, marketing, and promotion, as well as attracting amazing guests, just like my guest today, to appear on the show. All this comes at a price, and off the back of the global pandemic, my business and my podcast have taken a hit. Cash flow has been reduced, making it increasingly difficult to reinvest and grow. I also lost a couple of potential sponsors for very similar reasons. Therefore, I'm asking for your help and support for this podcast so I can reach and inspire even more people around the globe and help them to live a longer, healthier, happier, and more joyful life. If you could make a donation, no matter how small or large, to support me and the show via the crowdfunding campaign, I would be forever grateful. I will also give you a shout out on the podcast and on social media for anybody who decides to donate their hard-earned money. This is an emotional and mental battle for me because I really do hate asking for money. But in these unprecedented times, even a dollar would go a long way to upgrading my show and ultimately upgrading your experience as a listener. You can donate easily and simply via my crowdfunding page. The link is in the description of this podcast. And please do leave me a personal message, or if you prefer to remain anonymous, you can do. Either way is absolutely cool. Much love and thanks in advance. And now I would just like to give a big shout out to the people who have donated so far, who are as follows: Andrew, Sam, Ali, Fiona, Cheryl, Ruth, Gus, and Oyi. Thank you so much for your kind donations. They really, really do mean a lot to me, and I can't thank you enough for helping support me and supporting this podcast. Much love to you, and I just want to let you know that your help and support will help myself and this podcast to grow and inspire more people. I would now like to mention our sponsors of the show. Our first sponsor is Pure Himalayan Shilajit. Shilajit is an ancient mineral from the Himalayas which has been used in the East for its powerful benefits for thousands of years. Shilajit helps to increase your energy and mental performance, plus many other benefits. I've personally been using Shilajit for a while now, and I've noticed improvements in my cognitive performance and my energy levels. And I'd love for you to benefit from this powerful ancient mineral, so I've partnered up with my good friends over at purehimalayanshilajit.com, and they are offering every listener of the show a 15% discount off any order of Shilajit. Simply hit the link in the description of this podcast, place an order, and bang in the code AliWest at checkout. That's AliWest, AliWest at checkout, to bag your discount. Our second sponsor is Mudo Health. Mudo are a DNA testing company, and they make testing your DNA and getting your own genetic profile super easy. All you do is you order your testing kit from their site, it's mailed out to you, you take a simple saliva test, send it back to their lab, and within a couple of weeks, you will get a breakdown of your genetic health with over 90 plus reports on your DNA. Also, you'll get a report and a breakdown on how you can make improvements to your own health on the deepest levels, all laid out in an easy, user-friendly mobile app. Mudo has revolutionized my health, my clients' health, and also my family's health. My dad recently got off his medication after implementing the guidance in his genetic report from his DNA test with Mudo Health. That's why I've teamed up with the guys at Mudo to help the listeners of the Kinetic Fitness Show improve their DNA health as well. They are offering all listeners of the show an amazing 20% off any DNA kit purchase. Simply hit the link in the description, add your kit to the basket, and at checkout, put in the code ALDNA. That's ALDNA, A-L-D-N-A, A-L-D-N-A. ALDNA at checkout to bag your incredible discount. Okay, let's introduce my guest today and get stuck into today's episode. My guest today is Damien Hall. Damien is a runner, coach, and journalist. And Damien is a record-breaking ultramarathon runner who has represented Great Britain and achieved competitive results in some of the world's toughest races. He is a UK athletics running coach, widely published journalist and author, public speaker, and parent. Damien thanks his midlife crisis for getting into ultramarathon running. He's represented Great Britain, recorded competitive results at some of the world's toughest races, and set 7 records for fastest known times, or FKTs. He's currently working on a book about it all with Vertebrae Publishing, which is due out in May of this year. So what will you learn in today's episode, and what are some of the key takeaways? Well, firstly, you will learn all about Damien's story of being a non-runner to becoming an ultramarathon runner and representing his country. You'll also learn about the mental and physical elements of ultra running. You will learn how to not become obsessed with running and lose the love for it. Damien also talks about his training for running and ultramarathon running. He also explains how having a team around him has helped him to improve and progress in his running career. You'll find out about the mindset of an ultra runner and what goes through Damien's mind when he's running. You'll also learn about how Damien used the three F's for motivation when attempting to break a record. You'll learn about breaking records and the mindset it takes to set records. You'll also learn why Damien celebrates his achievements and remembers them, but why it's vitally important to enjoy the process. Damien also shares his three top tips to improve your running straight away. You'll also learn why getting out in nature is so beneficial for your physical and mental health, plus much, much more. If you do enjoy today's episode, then please share it with your friends, family, and loved ones. One of the best ways that you can share this podcast is via social media. So simply grab a screenshot of this episode, tag me in it, Ali West Coach, and tag my guest, Ultra_Damo, and we will share it with all of our friends and followers as well. Another great way to promote this show and to help this show grow is by leaving a review. So if you do have access to Apple Podcasts, then please leave me a review. I love reading them and they help me immensely. That's about it. Let's get started. Let's not waste any more time. This is episode 109 with Damien Hall. Enjoy. Hi, Damien. Thanks for joining me on the podcast today. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, good. How's your day been? Been busy?
Yeah, it's been all right. Can't think of anything exciting to really tell you. We are trying to move house, but today hasn't been especially stressful. But I think we've got a few busy days up ahead. But no, all good, thank you. Yeah.
It's surprising how many people have moved house this year and how many people are moving at the moment. My mum's just about to move house, actually, and it's crazy how many people are moving about.
Yeah, I mean, we were looking to anyway, but certainly I've read a story, I think, on The Guardian saying, you know, yeah, a lot of people who live in, because of the lockdowns and so on, people who live in the urban places have wanted to get to rural places, which makes a lot of sense. I really feel for, I suppose, people who are stuck in cities during the lockdowns we've had this year. I'm very lucky. Yeah, I'm out in the country in Wiltshire. And yeah, I can't really imagine what it was like to be stuck, especially if you're in a block of flats or something. That must have been really, really tough. So yeah, I'm a big advocate of green and lumpy places. So if more people are getting out to them and enjoying them, then good.
Definitely. We'll definitely talk about that on this podcast as well today, about the nature and getting outside. And yeah, no, I can completely agree with you. A lot of people have been trapped inside and it's not been the best. We're quite lucky where we are. We live in an apartment complex, but we've got a communal garden, so we could get out in that. But also we're right on the edge of the Peak District, so I was out in the Peak District all the time, getting up there in the hills and getting out in nature, like you say, because it's good for the soul.
Oh, nice. Oh, you're very lucky then.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Well, a good starting point for the show, mate, would be to fill the listeners and myself to some extent in with your story, a bit of your backstory, who you are, what you do, where you've come from, and we'll go from there.
The short version is, I suppose I'm a 45-year-old parent with a running problem. I suppose you probably got me on here to give you more of a longer version, or the show might be quite short. But so I'll give you, I suppose I could tell you a bit more. I'm a bit of a cliche. I discovered the joys of running in my sort of mid to late 30s. Only eight or nine years ago. Before that, I was quite sporty. I used to play a lot of football, but I was hopeless. And I really enjoyed trekking, I suppose. So sort of multi-day walks, especially. And I've been lucky to sort of travel a lot, and I've done a lot of the hikes, I suppose the famous hikes around the world, like the Inca Trail and the Everest Base Camp Trek, and lots in New Zealand and Australia and so on. And around Britain, coast to coast walk and the Pennine Way and things like that. So I loved that sense of, those like mini adventures where you're self-reliant and you carry a pack and look after yourself and just go on these little adventures. So that was what I was like, I suppose, 10 years ago. And then, I had this life-changing moment, really, when I signed up for the Bath Half Marathon. I'd recently moved to Bath from Sydney, Australia, and I was just feeling a bit unfit. And I think I was working all through the night on a project, and I just thought, oh, I'm fed up with this. I need to get fit. So I signed up and did it the next, I think it's March 2011. And just straight away loved it. And things really escalated, I suppose. I didn't realize how many other races there were. So I did wait quite a long time to do the Bath Half again. I didn't realize there were so many races all around the country every weekend. But 5 years after that, I was basically representing Great Britain at ultra marathon running. So I suppose that the next year, 2012, I did my first marathon and my first ultra marathon, and had even more of a powerful sense. The ultra marathon, of course, was kind of what I say, of course, some of them are on roads, but usually they're off road, you know, in lumpy places in the hills, great views, etc. And straight away thought, wow, I've got to do more of this. This is for me. And yeah, got quite carried away, got into the Great Britain team. And since then have, try to put it humbly, but I suppose broken some records. I haven't actually won many races, but I suppose I've placed highly in some races. But yeah, and it's pretty much become my way of life, really. Like, I'm a full-time running coach and runner, in less than a decade, I suppose. It's, yeah, in a way, turned my life around in several ways. So yeah, that was a big moment, actually. Yeah.
What was it then, Damien, about running that just got you going and made you stick with it? What was the thing that really kept you going with it and kept you sticking with the sport? And obviously, like you said, you're a person with a running problem. So what was it that made you have this problem?
Yeah, I mean, that seems such a straightforward question. It's actually quite difficult to answer, and it's something I think about a lot. What is it about running? But it's definitely, there are a lot of us. Running's booming and has been for about a decade, and especially in people around, 30s and onwards. And there could be, I guess there are lots of reasons, but the more obvious stuff is simply that it's just such a simple sport. You know, all you really need is a pair of daps. You can go out at any time, any place. And I definitely found that was convenient around that time, because I was becoming a parent. I became a parent sort of, not long after my first half marathon, and football wasn't impossible, but wasn't as easy to do. So it's really nice and flexible. I suppose you notice the health benefits. What surprised me was the mental health benefits, that I just felt very happy. Usually, during a run at times, although you're not always happy, are you, I suppose, on a long hill. But then often afterwards, of course, you feel fantastic as well. And that can kind of it genuinely gets addictive. I would say I probably am addicted to running. I can take a day off, but there's an addiction, hopefully mostly healthy. And then when you just start doing it, those, like with anything new, really, the progression is quite fast. So you get, you're getting PBs at every distance, and then your next one, you're training just a little bit harder and you're getting another PB, and that's all quite exciting. And I suppose quite early on, I realized, well, not that early on, but like in that second year, realized I did all these crazy distances. And after my first marathon, I did this. Yeah, it was a 69 mile ultra marathon over 2 days. But even then, I was open to the idea. I was beginning to hear like there are 100K races, 100 mile races. And that was my fascination, was how far can you go? So the next year, and there are other, before I skip on too much, I mean, obviously I was making friends. There's great camaraderie in these events, definitely more in the trail running scene. I just found, road running's perfectly friendly, but you've got your head stuck. You've got your face stuck to the watch, checking that you're on, hitting that certain pace to get that PB, and a race could often be a success or a failure judged on just a few seconds difference. Whereas trail running was just a lot more relaxed, and people were just, you just felt like a team spirit almost, actually. You're kind of all in it together. And obviously the scenery is better. And physically, I mean, I know this might sound strange to some people, but if you run a marathon on tarmac, like, it's really hard on your body, on your joints. You could run a longer distance on trails, and even if there are hills involved, I think it's a more physically enjoyable experience. Often you're not going as fast as well, I suppose, but I think it's healthier for you, like physically. All right, when you get up to 100 miles, you know, yeah, maybe some of those health benefits are lost and replaced with bashing up benefits or something. But where was I? So yeah, there was a fascination with, well, if I could run that far, could I run 100 kilometers? And the other caveat actually always is, when I say run 100 kilometers, almost always there's some hiking involved, and that might be simply preserving yourself on a long hill, or you're just a bit tired for a bit, or you're getting some food in, which is a really important part of it. You might just hike for a bit while you're getting some food in, but that gives your whole body like a bit of a rest, and just means you can keep going and keep going. So it's not like, I can see how some people might run a marathon and think I couldn't run any further, but it isn't quite like that, because you go slower, you take some breaks, you relax, you're distracted by the scenery. But anyway, yeah, I did my first 100K, and then it was like, well, what's next? Well, 100 miles, you know. So, you know, did that, and that was kind of mind blowing. And just it just sort of carried on up the distances, actually. Yeah, then I was doing the spine race quite early on, which is 268 miles along the Pennine Way. And again, that's 4 or 5 days that took, and you do stop and sleep in that. And then even after that, a year or two later, yeah, the longest run I've done is 2016. I ran the Southwest Coast Path, which is 630 miles. Now, obviously, that took me like best part of 11 days. So I did sleep. Every night we slept, but not for long. But yeah, that just showed me, I suppose, that you can go on for almost as long as you want to, as long as the mind is willing, barring catastrophic injury, which can happen. But and there were so many elements to be fascinated by, including that mental side of it, which was, yeah, like if your mind wants to, if you want to, then your body can, in most circumstances, carry on. But there are always moments where you're not so sure you want to carry on, and then what motivates you then, and so on. So that was fascinating. I just loved and was fascinated by this new world of this crazy sport of ultra marathon running.
When you took to it then, Damien, when you took to these first few runs you did, so the marathon and then building it up, did you find it, in air quotes, easy, or did that surprise you, or was it a challenge at first and it gradually got easier? How did you find it on those first few runs?
Yeah, I think some elements of it have come naturally to me, but I definitely found the races, you know, they were hard and they hurt. Although we're sometimes guilty of almost over glamorizing the hurt. Some of that would have been inadequate training, you know. But yes, some elements felt natural to me. And actually, there were a lot of the same elements from the trekking, which was, I suppose, you know, you're used to having sore feet or sore leg muscles, or you know, just any sort of, I suppose, mild physical issues. So I was quite used to that. So that, I suppose, if you're not used to that and you do something, you know, it's tempting to go, well, why am I doing this? This is horrible. I'm going to stop because it might get worse. Whereas if you're a bit used to that, often it doesn't get worse, or you know how to treat it, or, you know, sometimes it's just chafing or something, isn't it? Or just, well, I suppose, just muscle soreness or stiffness. But you learn it doesn't, you know, and I love the phrase, it never always gets worse, which is a quote from an American ultra runner that fits quite nicely with the sport. So there was an element of it that felt quite natural. But yeah, I mean, that first race, the wall in 2012, definitely, I suppose, yeah, quads got very sore early on, as they did in nearly all my races for the first 2 or 3 years. Like I wasn't conditioned enough for that. Yeah, I wasn't training enough or smartly enough early on, although I did get a coach quite early, and things improved from there. So yeah, a bit of both, but I also just straight away had this passion for it. I just loved it. So
you had the passion and you enjoyed it, but you also had that kind of intrigue, like it was interesting to you, and the mind was getting challenged as well as the body. That's the kind of takeaway I'm getting from what you said in that first piece, for sure.
Yes, no, it absolutely fascinated me, and there are so many elements, and even now, even though I've been coaching people for years, there are still so many elements that fascinate me, and we don't always know the answer. So the obvious things, you know, firstly, how do you train to be your best at, I don't know, 100 miles or a multi-stage race, which might go over 4 or 5 days? or a 50k race, which is again quite different, or a race in the desert, or a race I've done a race in sort of Arctic Sweden, the Ice Ultra. So you've got all these different environmental factors as well. How do you train for them? And then also how do you race in those environments? Because there are factors to consider. There's altitude, there might be mountains. So all those fascinating elements. And then sort of how do you fuel? How do you fuel your training well? How do you fuel in a race? How do you hydrate? What about electrolytes or sodium? How do you pace it? And then an area, if I'm honest, I've only recently started really looking into better working with a sports psychologist, you know, the whole psychological element of it, which is just huge. Something that interests you, like, you know, yeah, I mean, strength training, how do we strength train for this sort of stuff? And I'm a big advocate of additional strength training for almost all ultra distance runners. So there's so many elements there. And then also the sport is so, yeah. And then you don't even, well, I guess I was hinting there are so many distances, so many different terrains, so many different styles of races. And then also you don't have to do races. You could just run for the fun of it. And then also more recently, I suppose, you could go for records or one-off challenges. You don't even need to do organized events, which has been a lot more popular this year, obviously, with a lot of events not allowed to take place. And then I suppose there's kit as well, which is another element. So to me, it's just endlessly fascinating, to me anyway.
I want to touch on some of the training and the nutrition and maybe the recovery in just a moment. But before we do that, I just want to backtrack to what you were saying earlier about how you say you're addicted to running, and some people do get addicted to running and exercising. I mean, you can be addicted to anything. But what I tend to see sometimes with runners, more so road runners, is they kind of get obsessed with it, and the love and the passion goes out of it, because like you say, they're constantly looking at their watch, or they're trying to beat a certain time, or they've got their headset on, I've got to do a 10K in X or a half marathon in X, and they just lose the love. So just before we touch on the other parts, what would be your tips and advice for not getting like crazy obsessive with it and keeping the love of running there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't feel I've ever lost my kind of mojo. And that might be because I'm much more interested in the ultra running on trails. It might be that. So like you say, in road running and maybe on the track, the returns get smaller, diminishing returns, because you get so close to what you might be possible for you to do at a marathon distance that you're only ever going to do a minute or two better, and you're going to work for 3 or 6 months to try and improve by 2 or 3 minutes. And I totally admire people who can do that. But to me, I know that would after a while become a bit demotivating, I think. Whereas the joy of the type of running I like, for me personally, is that there are so many different places in the world you can run. And even in Britain, there are so many different styles of races, you know, up and down mountains, along the coast. There are flat races. There are some races on tarmac if people want. There are multi-stage, all these different scenery, all different times of year, all these different distances. And what you find over time, it probably took me 2 or 3 years to, I suppose, for me personally, to find this type of race that suits me, or at least my mind is more excited about, I suppose, which is probably races around 100 miles. And usually, you know, the lumpier the better. They suit me, but I coach all sorts of people who want to do shorter, faster ones, or more kind of exotic ones, you know, in across deserts. And so there's so much variety that you can just experiment a lot and find what suits you. There seems to be so many more ways to stay engaged in it, I suppose.
Variation, then. Variation is key.
I think so. I mean, ultimately, I do, in the last few years anyway, end up doing fairly similar races and challenges, but I always know there's these other areas I could go into if I get a bit bored of these, I suppose. So yeah, I think it's the variation, the options there.
Talk to me then about your training, Damien. What does your current training regime look like? Because obviously you mentioned the actual training of running, but you mentioned weight training and resistance stuff as well. So what does your current training look like at the moment?
Yeah, and actually, one thing I didn't mention back then when I was sort of listing all that stuff was, and I think you've had Shane Benzie on your show, yeah. Is that right? I mean, yeah. One thing I, you know, he'd be furious at me. Well, he would be. He never gets furious, but he'll be teasing me for forgetting to mention technique, which is a huge factor, of course. Like, if you run lots of miles on bad technique, you probably end up injured or won't improve as a runner. So very early on, again, I was lucky. I did meet Shane almost by accident and learned his ideas and was like, oh, wow, like I've been doing it totally wrong. Just assumed running was something you didn't need to work on. I just thought, yeah, well, of course you can run. I've been running all my life. You know, it's easy. But actually, I was running horrendously. And yeah, definitely started improving when I started adopting his ideas. So yes, techniques are really important. How does my training look? Well, I think, yeah, in those first few years, and I did have several different coaches, but you're often, volume was sort of, I suppose, growing gradually over those years. I was always fascinated, you know, how much, what's the right amount of running volume per week or per month for me, or when, you know, when in a year or a cycle is a good amount of volume, a good idea, or let, you know, when should you do less? So I feel like I've experimented a lot. And I've been self-coached for a couple of years. And I mean, I've had good results when, I'd say possibly my best year was when I had the most running volume. And then I was running probably on average the kind of 80 to 90 miles a week. But then I did another year of doing similar and I didn't have such a good year, although there could be various reasons for that. But I'm actually finding at the moment, I mean, I feel great at the moment. I've set 3 records this year. There have been pretty much no races, but I'm doing quite a lot less now. And there might be an age thing. It might just be that I've maxed out pretty much my aerobic capacity. Difficult to be sure, but there's a fair chance of that because I've just done lots and lots of big, slow days, you know. So I'm much more around about the sort of 65 to 75 miles a week at the moment, which seems to suit me fine. And I feel fresher and faster running is better quality. And I'm, you know, I am 45, but I feel like I'm, yeah, I don't think I've age has affected my running yet. I guess we'll see, but yeah. And then I suppose additionally, I definitely strength train. Yeah, I suppose ideally twice a week, with, yeah, like we were discussing just before we started recording, actually, that a lot of that is remote nowadays, which in a way, partly because of the lockdowns, but in a way that makes it easier for me to do it with, you know, with someone watching me to make sure I'm doing it with good technique. That's become easier to doing it remotely. So yeah, I'll strength train. I suppose, yeah, I'll get regular. I go to my physio regularly and for an MOT, you know, every 2 to 3 weeks normally. Foam rolling, you know, for nutrition's important, but I think it's probably been overcomplicated in the last few years with some sort of maybe some theories on how we should eat that aren't necessarily that grounded in science. And I don't think it's, in a way, not that complicated. You know, so I'm lucky. I speak with Renee McGregor, who's a sports dietitian. And a friend. So if in doubt, I can sort of ask her questions and for my coaching clients as well. What else? Yeah, like I do have a coach myself at the moment, David Roach, who's an American coach. So yeah, I guess I've built a team around me, of 5 or 6 different people, 5 or 6 different experts in different areas. I work with precision hydration as well, because I was getting cramps in some races in hotter conditions. And they've given me a bespoke sweat test to see how much sodium or salt I actually sweat out, which has been really useful. So I need to take on more electrolytes than I realized. And since then, well, I haven't really done a hot race, but since then, you know, I haven't had any cramping issues and I've felt better. So really, yeah, I've built a team around me of sort of 6 or 7 experts that I can go to, and also that will help, you know, do help inform me as a coach and help my clients too. So yeah, I suppose, going back to that point I made, that there's just so many fascinating elements to training for ultramarathons that just keeps it interesting. And then the other psychology as well. I'll be working with a sports psychologist too. So it's, yeah, I feel like I'll almost never fully understand it because there are so many aspects.
Yeah, for sure. Which elements then, out of all of those that you've just mentioned and those different facets of what you do, which one do you think has made the biggest impact? Working on which one has made the biggest impact on your running, or do you think it's a combination of all of them?
Oh, what a question. I mean, ultimately you've got to, you know, sort of build a, get as fit as possible and build a good engine. So I think it is the actual running coaching. I think it's got to be that aspect really. But then, you know, you could be super fit and if psychologically you're not prepared, you know, if you're not, your mind's not in the right place for a big challenge, you might be perfectly physically, you know, capable of doing it, and it just goes wrong because of some cycle, you know, because of a setback that you weren't anticipating or something. Yeah, no, that's a great question. And then, yeah, technique comes into it and so on and so on. So, yeah, it's, I suppose ultimately it's got to be the running. It's got to be getting as fit as possible. That's got to be the number one thing, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. I think I heard a quote some time ago, and it was, I think it was to do with football, and the coach said, oh, if you want to get better at football, play football. And I was like, oh yeah, fair point. It's same thing, isn't it? You want to get better at running, do more running.
Yeah. So when I started out in journalism, actually the best advice I got early on was read, write. Which again, sounds kind of obvious now, but it was like, yeah, just read as much as possible, write as much as possible. Even if you're just writing for yourself, just practice. Yeah. That's what people need to do, I suppose.
You mentioned the psychology of running there, and I guess you could call that the mindset. When you're doing these long runs or these ultras, or you're going out breaking records, what's going through your mind? What's on your mind when you're doing it? Don't say not a lot.
I mean, it kind of is, you know, sometimes your mind is completely empty, and that's probably because things are going well. Sometimes it's, you know, it's wonderful, you're relaxed and happy and blissful. But obviously it's not always like that, or it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be a challenge if everything was going well and it wasn't difficult. Not that you have to, you know, you don't have to do difficult challenges, but I suppose that's I enjoy that. So probably the best example of that is in the summer, I ran a new record on the Pennine Way, which is 260 miles. And I knew, yeah, it was a really competitive record. So I knew I had to be really motivated. It was going to take me 2.5 days, pretty much nonstop. And there would definitely be moments where I'd feel very tired and not necessarily want to quit, but want to sit down for a long time or lie down or just cry a bit. Or sleep a bit more than I just sleep a bit more than I simply had time for. So it was more about staying motivated to sort of keep moving at a decent pace. What I did was chatting to this sports psychologist, Dr. Josie Perry. She recommended, yeah, thinking long and hard about what was going to motivate me, what was my why, and then trying to make it kind of visual, so that I would have these reminders. What I did in the end was I got a permanent marker and I wrote 3 F's on my forearm, and that stood for friends, family, future. So the simple family one is, yeah, to be honest, that's always the most emotionally motivating thing, is thinking of my children when it's hard. And I think parents do have a slight unfair advantage in that they've got that extra motivational factor of I suppose wanting to inspire or impress their children or at least do something they might be proud of, I suppose, or set an example. That's quite powerful to me. Obviously, if I quit, I could actually be home quicker and see my kids sooner. So it's kind of, I try not to think of that angle too much. And then friends, for this Pennine Way run, I had a lot of people helping me, actually. Like, I had a road crew meeting me every few hours to feed me and so on. And then I had pacers running with me all the time. So people have made a lot of effort to come and meet me at, you know, 3 a.m. or something in the dark up a hill, you know, and you kind of think, wow, these people have really given up their time for me. They've invested in me. They think I can do it, or they hope I can. I can't let them down. You know, I've got to keep going and keep working for their benefit. So I had those two were very powerful to me. And then thirdly, I am a bit stressed out about, I've got sort of climate anxiety. I'm a bit stressed out about our ecological and climate emergency. So I was trying to make it as sort of, I suppose I had a bit of an environmental message. You know, you could pick holes in it because obviously ultimately more car journeys happened for me doing this trip than would have happened. But I tried to do it in, you know, without using animal products, without creating any plastic waste. And we even picked up litter as we went as well. And I did offset, you know, the whole thing was carbon negative. But so that motivated me a lot as well. So I had these three Fs and it was as simple as, you know, I'd look at my, you know, when I felt fed up and really just wanted a good lie down, I'd look at my forearm and think, no, I've got to, you know, I've got to keep going for these reasons. So yeah, that was what, and I think for anyone else, they've just got to make it personal to them. You know, why are you doing it? What, you know, what's going to motivate you?
The power of the why, I guess. It's the why are you doing anything? What's the purpose behind it? What's the desires behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it can probably, I mean, I'm not a life coach, but I imagine that can be applied to, you know, everyday life. Yeah, I think that's pretty powerful. I think that's what people should think of when they're doing something difficult. Why, you know, decide why, and then you can remind yourself, you know, when it gets difficult.
You mentioned the F of family. How do your family respond to you doing all these miles and these crazy races and stuff? Are they fully behind you? Because sometimes I think a family might be like, oh, why does he keep doing it or whatever? But if I just wondered, what's it like from your perspective? Do they love it? Do they back you up? What's the crack?
No, they're not very. Yeah, I think they're downstairs. I think I can talk frankly, hopefully. Yeah, they're not very interested, if I'm honest. My kids are six and nine. So they've got a better idea now of what I'm doing. But yeah, it's not.
Oh, Daddy's going for a run.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll sometimes say, look, I'm really sorry. I'm going to be away for 3 or 4 days. And hopefully they're joking, but they'll literally say, we don't care. You know, bad luck for your race. So it's a bit of a joke in our household that, you know, Daddy's always going on about running and always off running. And I mean, hopefully I've mostly got the balance right. I suppose, you know, maybe later on they'll tell me, hopefully I've got it right. Hopefully I've, even though they're not interested now, hopefully later in their lives, they'll take something from it. But, you know, ultimately I got to be honest, maybe they won't, maybe they will remember that I was, but I mean, yeah, I'm at home in the week, for example, because I do work at home, whether in lockdown or not, I'm around a fair bit at home. So hopefully I've got a good balance. But I mean, I guess ultimately we'll have to ask them in 10 or 20 years and see what they think.
Yeah, absolutely. the next thing I want to talk about is breaking records. So obviously you've said already this year you've broken quite a few, and I know you've broke records in the past. And you're not the first record breaker on my show. I've had quite a few now, I think 7 or 8, I think. And I always find it quite interesting, the mindset again around breaking records. So when you do set these records, before you go out and do it, do you have that in your mind? Are you thinking, oh, I'm going to go and break a record today? Or do you just go and do it and see what happens? What's the kind of mindset behind that?
All three that I'm trying to think now. Yeah, I think it's 6 or 7 records running records I've sort of broken, or we sometimes call them FKTs, fastest known times, although that's being debated a lot at the moment. That's kind of an American phrase and there's a bit of pushback at the moment that we should just call them running records. And not all of those do I still hold the records for. Sometimes people have beaten them, but the three I did this year, which was the winter record on the Paddy Buckley Round and the South Wales Traverse in the Brecon Beacons and the Pennine Way. Yeah, they were all very, very deliberate. But they were all areas I knew very well. And I'd run on those. I think I'd run every single step of those previously. I mean, starting off in winter, I suppose I already had I had the summer record anyway. So it was, you know, I knew it intimately. It was more about having a winter adventure on the same place in Snowdonia. yeah, it was a very deliberate record attempt. The Pennine Way definitely was, but again, I knew it very well. So you could, you know, one really worthwhile thing to do for those who can is, I suppose, if you go and run a section of it at record, at the current record pace or the pace you think you could do. And obviously that gives you a good idea of what might be possible. That said, it wasn't like definitely on, say, the South Wales Traverse, which I only broke by five minutes after sort of 14 hours of running. You know, it wasn't like I ran a section and thought, yeah, I'll get that easily. It was like, oh yeah, it's tight, but maybe it's possible. So for that, yeah, for all three, yeah, it was definitely deliberate, but I suppose I had some indicators that it might be possible for me, but it definitely wasn't a foregone conclusion on any of them. So they took a lot of, the Pennine Way took a lot of logistics and a lot of planning. That was the longer one that was 2.5 days. A lot of planning, you know, I had a big team around me, a lot of research into the, you know, buying food and so on, putting together a really fairly complex schedule for, you know, lots and lots of people to come and go. So a lot of preparation on that. That doesn't mean you can't just rock up somewhere and break a record, because obviously now, especially, there are so many kind of FKTs or even sort of glorified Strava segments that, in a way, in Strava culture, you can sort of rock up and you know, set a little record. And maybe, you know, maybe it's not the stiffest, the toughest record, but for some people, actually, you know, they might set, you know, do something amazing. So you can do it both ways, I think. But obviously the tougher records, the more historical ones, they're going to be harder. So they're going to need more preparation, I'd say.
And when you've achieved one of these records, what's the feeling and the reaction after? Do you celebrate it, or just like, okay, that's done and crack on?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I do try and celebrate, because I think you never know. I suppose that could have been the greatest moment of your you know, your running career, or even one of the greatest moments of your life. So I want to be able to remember them. But usually straight afterwards, I'm a complete wreck. So definitely I remember the Pennine Way. Yeah, but I hadn't actually had a drink for 4 months. Someone put a, you know, a pint of ale into my hand, which I was very grateful for. But, you know, halfway through that, I was falling asleep. I'm probably slurring incoherently as well. But yeah, I was a wreck. And then we went back to hotel with two of my crew in Buxton in Derbyshire. And I remember saying, oh, I'll just have a quick shower and then we can go down to the bar. And my friend who knew me better than that said, that's not going to happen, is it? And so, yeah, we just all crashed out. But then at 4 a.m, I was wide awake, ate a cold pizza. And then I suppose I was on my way home. So there wasn't a whole load of celebrating. But actually, after the South Wales Traverse, what was really lovely is a local lady there had come out to help us called Ruth. And she was putting us all up in her farm. So we actually could have a, you know, it wasn't a huge night or anything, but we all had a couple of beers and a feed. And that was actually really lovely, because it is a shame when you really accomplish something, and it nearly always is quite a team effort, you know, and then everyone's off, they've gone. You don't always get that moment. I think it's important to celebrate to an extent. Yeah, no, I think that's important.
Definitely. I agree with you, mate, because if not, then I always think, what's the point? Yeah, you've got to celebrate your success to some extent, but also, and I think we've mentioned this before on the podcast, is enjoying the process of doing it as well, because a lot of people, they go after that goal and they don't actually enjoy the part of actually doing it, and then they get to the goal and they're like, oh, I've achieved it now and I've not enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, I mean, that fascinates me, because I've forgotten her name now, but a very high profile Olympian, I think from America, came out recently and said she's just in this week and said she had massive mental health problems since winning a gold medal. And I've forgotten her name, but a better example, I don't know if you know the rugby player Johnny Wilkinson, who kicked the winning points for England to win the World Cup back in 2003. And then he retired like 4 or 5 years later. But I was listening to a fascinating interview with him where he said, you know, winning the World Cup, he felt really kind of empty. And also when he retired, he realized, you know, and his very last game, they won a cup, like his final game, they win a cup. And he thought he would just feel hugely euphoric, but he was like gutted because he couldn't play anymore. Mm. So the joy was in the playing, not in the trophy. The joy was in the doing, the getting there, the process. And yeah, I think that's really true of so many things. I even found that when I went traveling a lot when I was younger, actually, you know, you were aiming for a certain city or a certain place from your guidebook. But actually the journey there was often the more exciting, the more memorable experience, for several reasons. And you know, the actual traveling was the joy, rather than the destination often. And in running also, yeah, I think when I started out, it was all about the races. I was just training so I could race. And now I'm almost racing so that I can train, I would say. You know, I enjoy the training much more than I used to. I don't know when that switched or how, but I realized, like, yeah, a day out in the mountains with friends or on my own actually is often more rewarding than a race experience. It's difficult to exactly explain why, but it might be lack of pressure and stuff. But I realized when I did very well at Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc, I was looking in 2018, I was looking back at my year, and actually my favorite run was a training run for that with some friends. So yeah, I think if people can think more like that, be aware of that idea at least, then that can be helpful, because if it's all about the outcome, you know, there's so much more scope for it not to be happy with what's happened, I suppose.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, we've talked a lot there, mate, about some of your successes, but what I'm keen to maybe share with the listeners is some challenges you've had. So what have been some of the biggest challenges throughout your running career, and how have you overcome them?
Do you mean like failures?
Could say that.
Yeah, I mean, but not every race has gone well. In fact, yeah, my biggest probably regret, or I'm a little bit haunted by, you know, the one time I did represent Great Britain, my race was miserable. And there are several reasons for that, but I did finish the race, but I had a lot of cramp and, you know, really couldn't run in the way I would have wanted to, could hardly move at some points, you know, and I hadn't really had cramp before that. So it was a whole new experience for me. But yeah, and it's complicated, but you get six people in a team and the first three count towards the sort of team, the overall score. And I was running fourth. Two of our guys had already dropped out. I was running fourth and I was already having a nightmare with this cramp and I was way back. But I thought, well, at least there are three guys ahead of me who are doing well. At least my mishap isn't going to affect the team result. And then one of the guys ahead of me dropped out. So my placing suddenly became not just really important, but pretty much the most important, because the two guys ahead were already doing quite well and we needed and there was only me left. And if I dropped out, I mean, I never really considered that. I haven't yet sort of dropped out of an ultra marathon, but like if I dropped out, then there wouldn't even be a team score. So there's no way I could drop out, but my placing would pretty much dictate our overall placing. And I came in, I can't remember, 50 or 60 or something. I mean, it was a very competitive field, but that meant GB finished 11th overall when the previous time they'd been in the top three. So it was quite embarrassing. And I don't know what's worse. Yeah, me hanging in there, but doing so miserably, all the guys that dropped out of the race for probably very legitimate reasons. I mean, they all had injuries of sorts. So yeah, I felt pretty bad. Like what I'd enjoyed about the sport was that it was such an individual thing. After years and years of playing team sports, ultra running was individual. Like it was just me. And, you know, if I didn't have a good time, it was only me. I'd only let myself down. But in this instance, I'd let a team down, and I'd let my country down. You know, it's quite a profound thing to think about. And I guess that's bothered me for a while. How did I sort of get over it? It might sound the way I'm talking about it like I never have, but I don't know. I mean, I suppose not long after that, I did have a bit of a niggle at the time, an Achilles issue, which I'd had for a little while, and I did have to take some time off. and I'd had a huge year. I'd probably done too much in that whole year. So I guess I had a bit of a reset, and it was like, right, yeah, you've got to take some time off and almost start over, do some different challenges. So I sort of did a multi-stage race. And then I got back to the longer races, which I was probably better at, and those races went quite well. So I think, yeah, I remember really enjoying the training again. So I think it was almost trying to forget, you know, try not to dwell on it too much. Mm. You know, one of my teammates, actually, Kim Collison, who I'm a big fan of, you know, he didn't have a great race, and he kind of said, you know, at the end of the day, it's only a race, you know. And at the time, I didn't feel that way at all, because I felt, you know, really devastated about it. But, you know, it was only a race. No one got properly hurt from it, you know. So putting it in context, I suppose, you know, is, you know, we're lucky to be healthy and fit and be able to do these races. That's, you know, a lot of people can't say that. So sometimes you just have to put it in the context, move on a bit, and get back to what you love, I suppose. So that probably was getting back to the Brecon Beacons, getting back to the lumpier, longer races that suited me better. And then I started having good results again. So, yeah, I don't know if I've really answered your question in kind of a neat summation, but that's kind of my story there, I suppose.
No, that's a big, big obstacle, challenge, what maybe could have been a potential banana skin for a lot of people. They might have dwelled on it for too long and not got back on the wagon like you did, and let it overwhelm them or take over them. But I think the way that you've overcome it is just getting back to it and getting back to what you're passionate about and on to the next one, so to speak.
Yeah, it seemed to work for me in that case anyway. Yeah.
What's the plans then for the future, Damien? What's 2021 going to bring for you and beyond? Any more challenges? What are you looking to do?
Well, probably like with most people that you might ask that question, we're just in this uncertain time, aren't we? But what is great about the sport I'm in is that yeah, we're not totally dependent on races for our sort of buzz of challenge, you know, of doing challenges. So I suppose next year I've got two races in mind, but also probably two challenges in mind. And I mean, I was already doing a lot of non-race challenges, but this year did remind me how much I love that, actually. Sometimes you miss the more, you know, you could do them totally solo, and you do sometimes miss the more social aspect of the sport, but you can also do them, you know, with people helping you if they want to. And so you can still get a big social, you know, that social feeling, camaraderie from that. So I suppose next year I'm looking at, yeah, two, hopefully two big races and two big challenges. But I think, like everyone, we've got to have that open mind of, we don't totally know these events will take place. And one of them is in January. So, you know, whether it can really take place, that's the spine race, whether it can really actually happen. I suppose by the time this comes out, people will know, but it's probably going to be quite difficult for that race to happen this time around. But, you know, I mean, you've just always got to put it in the context, haven't you, of people are having a horrible, terrible time and people are dying around the world. So, you know, if our biggest complaint is that an event we wanted to do isn't happening, I mean, you know, that life's pretty good, really. So, yeah.
Sure. I always like to give the listeners and the audience some tips from the guests that I have on. So in relation to running, so if there's people listening to this that are maybe, they could be road runners, marathon runners, ultra runners, or fell runners. If you had to give them, say, three tips that they could put into practice to improve their running as soon as they've finished this podcast, what would those three tips be, mate?
Yeah, I think if you haven't thought about technique, then give that some thought. Look up Shane Benzie and Running Reborn. Some people run naturally quite well, but I've never seen anyone. I've worked with Shane a lot. We put on workshops together sometimes. I've never seen anyone who couldn't be improved with their technique. Some people are running, yeah, very badly, and they may be getting injured from that, or at least not realizing their potential. So I would say give your technique some serious thought. Look into it. Go to Running Reborn, and there are even some videos and stuff you can watch on there. For some ideas. For other runners, it really depends where they are now, but quite often, you know, just more easy volume may well, depends, you know, depends where they are. But I found the more I ran, the better I was, the better I got at it. But obviously you reach a point where, you know, maybe the injury risk is higher than the benefits. But a lot of people aren't, I find anyway, a lot of people I coach aren't at that level yet. So simply more easy running. And if you're going to increase volume, you know, always do it gradually, but yeah, just often just with lots of easy running, and that's the safest way. But then I suppose my third recommendation almost sounds like a contradiction of that, but this is probably aimed more at ultra runners who sometimes get stuck, as I have sometimes, in the trap of just lots of easy running. So I'd say once you've built up some good volume, some good consistency, some good weeks and months, yeah, don't forget to run fast sometimes as well, because that's going to, after a while of easy running, that's going to be your only pace. And you're not, yeah, you're going to plateau a bit. You're not going to have that extra gear or that bit of strength. So I would say run fast sometimes. And they could just be fartlek runs where you just, you know, run faster for a minute or two, relax again, recover. But also, yeah, try and do that on hills and trails, I think is, it sounds tougher to maybe a road runner, but it really isn't. After that adjustment period, you're going to be stronger and a better runner for doing that. So yeah, hopefully they're
good
usable
tips.
Okay.
Love it. Love it. There's one thing I want to ask just before we wrap things up. And that's, we mentioned right at the start and probably before we even started recording about the importance of getting out in nature and getting out in the countryside and fresh air. Can you just give some context to why that's so important and how it's helped you as well, and why more people should do it?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to look far to find research into this. Scientists talk about the biophilia effect, which is our innate desire to be in nature. And I think like a lot of people, I mean, yeah, not like a lot of people, actually. I was very lucky, I was brought up in a very outdoorsy environment. We weren't very sporty, but we were always camping and hill walking. And you, I guess at the time you just assume everyone has that. And then you realize it's not the case. And then obviously during my teens and early 20s, like a lot of people, I preferred pubs and various ways of different ways of getting high, shall we say. But then it, maybe as you get into early adult life, or for me, I suddenly had this feeling of almost this call of nature coming back to me, of wow. I remember being in a bus actually in Argentina, driving towards the mountains and just staring at them. Like I was like, oh wow, like absolutely spellbound that, and they really were calling at me, like, I've got to get more of that in my life, or I've got to get into those. I haven't been anywhere like that for years. Why haven't I? Like, I need to be in those places. And you know, that's part of the journey, I suppose, for me, of, you know, it joins in with the running journey, I think, in that, you know, a lot of my running is helping me to explore the, you know, nature, I suppose, or greener, lumpier places. And I honestly think that's totally universal, that we all need to get out in natural places more often. And like I say, there, yeah, lots of studies on it, whether it's older people, whether it's sort of combating dementia and all sorts that, but yeah, we need to be active, and ideally we need to be active in, you know, in nature. I think it's kind of beyond dispute. And of course our worlds are getting so technology heavy and so much more urban, and it's quite easy to kind of almost forget, I think, to do that. But I'm pretty confident, anyone would be happier to get a bit more, you know, a few more bogs and occasional bits of cow dung in their life. Yeah, I believe that quite passionately. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I'm exactly the same. I can't speak highly enough of getting out in nature, and you always feel better when you've done it. And it surprises me how many people just don't do it. Or here's an example as well. Sometimes I'll post a picture from one of our hikes. My wife and I do a lot of hiking or walking, and I'll post a picture maybe on Instagram or Facebook, and people will be like, where's that? And I'm like, oh, it's only in Derbyshire. It's like an hour away. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, just go out and explore places, because we're blessed here in the United Kingdom that we've got so much wonderful scenery and so much wonderful parts of nature that you don't have to go too far to find it. And I think a lot of people forget that, and they get stuck in their day-to-day grind. And sometimes you just have to take a step back and get out in nature.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% convinced that if someone isn't feeling all that happy, and if they're not going to green places, I think I'm really confident if they tried that for a bit, that would improve their mindset over time. I really, yeah, really believe that.
Definitely. I'm not a fan of stepping in cow paths though.
That's just a semi-inevitable consequence of, but yeah, well, you've got kind of proper hills near you, whereas yeah, I've got quite a lot of farmland actually. I mean, I've got some hills, but you've got some wilder terrain. You might have fewer cowpats. I'm not sure.
Oh no! Every time I go out, I see one more than one. Try and dodge them the best we can. But yeah,
we're not selling this. Go on, sorry.
We're not selling it. There's only a few cowpats, and they're not going to hurt you. So just if you're listening to this or watching this, go out, get in nature, even if it's just for 10 or 15 minutes. That's our advice. I was going to say, actually, we was actually up on the Pennine Way a couple of weeks ago. It's beautiful around there.
Whereabouts?
Just near Glossop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's cracking. Yeah. Yeah. And the Peak District is actually the second most, or it used to be, second most visited national park in the world. And that's partly, of course, because it's got these cities nearby, but it's really historical as well. It's a cracking place to get out to. And then the whole Pennine Way as well. And Britain is really blessed with trails. Like I don't know if we can directly compare it to many other countries, but it's got an incredible network of trails, like, you know, thousands of miles of trails. We've got a lot of footpaths that are just begging to be explored.
Definitely. Awesome. I think we'll wrap things up, mate. I've really enjoyed that. Where can the listeners go to find out more about you, Damien, and maybe consume some of what you're doing and checking on what you're up to?
Well, I'd be surprised if anyone wanted to. I would have thought I've bored them enough for now. But yeah, I'm on most of the obvious social media. I guess I prefer Instagram, probably is probably my preferred one. There's less squabbling on that one. And maybe less political manipulation and so on. I think I'm ultra_Damo. I think my name was gone, but I think if you search for my name, you'll probably find me. But Instagram's good fun. Strava. I'm on all of them, but Instagram's my favorite probably. Yeah.
Cool. I'll drop all the links in the description anyway. Final thing then, mate. A quote to finish the show. So we always end my podcast in the same way, and it's with a favorite quote. So just leave us with a quote to end the show, please.
Well, yeah, you did warn me of this, and I probably should have tried to find something nice and inspiring, but there is a quote that it's I'm building this up like it's going to be funny as well, which it's not really, but this is quite a good quote for ultra running, because it is a sport which has so many facets to it that even if you've prepared well, you need to be prepared for the idea that not everything's going to go well in your challenge or your race. So I think this quote sums it up really well. And I think it's from Mike Tyson's coach, and it's, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Love it.
So yeah, it's not a particularly nice quote, and it's not a particularly nice idea, but there's something about, yeah, plans are good, but they don't always work out, and you need to be ready for the idea that they're not going to work out. Not that needed explaining, but I don't really like the punch in the face bit. It's not that nice, but yeah, hopefully it made sense.
I get it. Thanks so much, Damien, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Cheers.
That's a wrap on another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. Until next time, peace and love.